welcome to the Revenue Hub podcast. I'm Trevor Grant. Through these podcasts, we aim to discuss topics relevant to professionals within the hotel, travel and leisure sectors, whether you're in a revenue management function, reservations, front office operations, digital marketing or sales. We hope the topics discussed will be of interest and either answer some questions or maybe prompt some more. Hi, so welcome to another Revenue Hub podcast. Delighted again to be joined by our colleagues from Berner and Becker. We have Veit with us. Hello, Veit. How are you?
Very good. How are you?
Yeah, good. And we're joined by Till again. Hi, Till. How are you?
Hi, Trevor. Good. How are you doing?
Very well. So let's crack off.
Perfect.
With our first question. You're not trying to take advantage of situations, but is there business still available now that we as hoteliers, restaurateurs could be looking at?
Yeah, I think there's numerous ideas actually flying around on the question of if there's still business available right now. When it comes to the point if business still is around at the moment, I think there's a point of, you know, is it business that I can really charge for, right?
Yeah, good point.
Is this something I should really be doing, right, in that special situation that we have right now? Just asking the question if I would be opening up my hotel for business now to help different people, like which kind of value would it really bring to them, and how could I help out basically people that are probably in need, and you know, institutions that are probably in need, to see if there's some sort of chance I can basically provide my services, and then ultimately deciding on if I can charge for that. And I think Till and me, we have put a couple of ideas together. So Till, I'm throwing it over to you to maybe tap into the first one.
Yeah, sure. For a couple of our properties, but also if you're researching a bit on the internet, you find that more and more hotel chains or individual hotels are now looking into renting out their rooms for home office purposes. So you can rent like a day use room with a desk and a chair, for example, for all those mom and pops at home that have a couple of kids running around, and you're running the risk in your next conference call that your children are knocking at the door and want to be entertained. So you can at least rent a room for a day, or some even have weekly or monthly offers. Usually it's quite cheap to rent them.
Yeah, it's a good idea. And you've got that self-isolation piece built in. You're not in a shared office where everyone's sitting around, are you?
Yes, that's true. You're still isolated in the room. Some hotel chains even offer to stay overnight at a highly discounted rate. Also, they deliver room service to your room as well. So that's an additional way of at least earning some money on your inventory. Might even be that you're not even covering costs, but I think nowadays it's even more important to at least squeeze out every penny out of your physical inventory that's possible.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think an area where this also taps in is, you know, where we can help out, for example, medical personnel. Mm-hmm. So I think in the UK and also here in Germany, we've seen a lot of examples actually in the some of the major cities and also smaller towns where, you know, hotels close to a hospital or anything have been opened up their hotels again and just provides accommodation for medical personnel. In the sense of, you know, they have a short way to work basically. They don't put families in danger once they have been in contact with some of their patients. So I think this is really something that could be looked into. So if there's any hotel out there who's not proactively been thinking about that point of, you know, reaching out that helping hand towards medical personnel, then I think this is certainly something to look into.
And I think that comes back on your point about that you mentioned earlier about kind of evaluating what you're charging or what you're not charging. You know, if it's someone coming to work, then maybe there's an argument that there could be a charge associated to it. But you could take a view that if you're releasing a few floors, for instance, to medical personnel that are helping us fight this battle, then you might just decide, well, the rooms are empty anyhow. I can give that away. And that balance is, you know, how and who you're trying to charge appropriately.
You know, and when it comes to providing the regular services of a hotel, I think that doesn't necessarily apply in that case, right? You can also cut down on the services that you really do, right? If you have medical personnel staying with you, then they need a bed where they have to sleep. They want to have a shower, and that's pretty much it. And then they're back to work anyway to help other people in need.
Yeah, good point.
So it's really focusing on what's important in that sense, and where you can make a positive contribution to helping other people.
Absolutely. Till, you were going to say something.
Yeah, there's also another way of helping in that current situation where we've seen in some countries, and that really applies to the different legislations over there, is that you can also rent out your hotel kind of as a hospital overflow. We've seen that in some countries hotels have been freeing up beds, where people with mild symptoms are self-quarantined, and the hotels are then catering them with food and also housekeeping services. And in some countries, I know you still need to make this ethical decision if you can charge for it or not, and what you yourself as a business want to put in, also money-wise, but also what you can actually afford. But in some countries, the government is also paying you for this service as you're helping them to free up additional hospital beds and hospital capacity.
Yeah, you're providing capacity. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, that's a good point.
Very good point.
What other avenues have we got?
We've seen a couple of hotels now going more into the direction of long-term rentals, at least on a monthly or several month basis. So as they have free rooms, they are providing them for people who move to a new city. But nowadays, it's a bit difficult to see new flats, so that you have people who are basically moved to a different city because they have a new job, but they are kind of stranded. There are some people who got freshly divorced. There were some of these cases I read about and seen them on a documentary last week. And also these people, they need a place to stay. And
yeah, that's a good point.
Hotels.
You can't view rents. You can't view flats or apartments, can you?
Yeah. And also you have less flats available, that people are not really moving out of their flats at the moment. So the housing market seemed to be less dynamic and as in normal times. And so for these people, it's a good opportunity to move into a hotel, at least for maybe a month or two, until the situation is getting better.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Absolutely valid point, I think.
And also looking at it then from outside of the room's capacity, what about the other operational elements of the hotel in and around sort of the F&B and the housekeeping and other elements?
Yeah, I think on the F&B part, like obviously if you have the chance as a hotelier to do that, let's say you have a restaurant which is currently not really in operation, but let's then also say you have been providing rooms to, for example, medical personnel. I'm using this term now again, but you know, those people, they usually don't have the time basically to just pop out from work, or maybe they come back from work super late. And an idea would be, obviously, if you can, try and convert your restaurant into some sort of food store, right?
Okay.
I mean, that's obviously also something that depends a little bit on official regulations.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
We're not the experts in terms of judging exactly on that, but I think this is also something where you can, you know, make a positive impact.
It's almost like a convenience grocery store, you mean, sort of have where they could get some basic provisions and things like this, rather than it forming a function as a restaurant. Yeah,
absolutely. I think that's something that can be looked into for a number of hotels, if there's any chance on that one. And the other part certainly is, why not try and use a restaurant to, you know, provide delivery or takeaway service?
Yeah, I mean, have you seen a lot of that?
Well, I even have one hotel around the corner. They are running a steakhouse, and they have put up a huge sign on the road that they do takeout and delivery every evening between, I think it's 6 p.m. and 9 p.m.
Brilliant.
So you can stop by and pick up your order, or they even deliver it to your home. And as this applies to many restaurants, at least here in Germany, that they do, they hooked up to all these online delivery app services. The question is, why shouldn't or why can't hotel restaurants do the same? It's physically also a restaurant. You can open up the kitchen, you can prep the meals that you have on your menu. So now it's really the question, what is allowed in terms of legislation to bring the food or how does the food get from your kitchen to the final consumer? In the past, it has been easy. You had a waiter and they brought it to the table. And now we just all need to think a bit more creative.
Yeah. I mean, the menus are all online, so you can often see the menus of the hotel anyhow. You've already got the skilled staff.
Yep.
When hotels have been talking for years about ancillary revenue, suddenly restaurants have opened up an avenue that can tap into these delivery apps, and they can handle the transactions for them and also handle the delivery for them. They've just got to produce the food.
Absolutely. And I think it's just something that, you know, develops much quicker nowadays, right, as we're in that situation. But it would anyway have been something that, you know, fond hoteliers and fond restaurateurs would have thought about.
Well, you would have hoped so.
Yeah, you would have hoped so, right? So, I think a pretty cool thing to do and to look into. And, you know, even if you also think about maybe you have not really got rid of all your food stock, basically, or all your remaining stock, you can then still make kind of some money with that, and use apps like Too Good To Go. Right?
Okay, where, I haven't heard of that one. Right.
I think Too Good To Go is should be pretty big in the UK, actually.
Okay.
I think millions of people are using that around the world, and this is basically where you can pick up food. Obviously, again, keep the social distancing, right? But you can basically pick up leftover food from the day from some sort of restaurant, some sort of place where you would usually get food from.
Oh, wow.
Cooked and prepared food, obviously, and get that for a fraction of the price. I think in terms of rather than throwing food away, this is a really good opportunity to actually, you know, keep it in the circle and
that's a really good point.
Make a little bit of money on that one.
Yeah.
So Too Good To Go is certainly something to check out.
And I think what you also have back to this from an ethical point of view, I mean, I don't know if they exist in Germany, but it's horrible to even have to say it, but we've got food banks in the UK, and there's been a big increase in the number of food banks that have been going on, which is a dreadful reflection on our society, but that's a completely different conversation. But again, you know, if you are sitting there and you do have fresh produce or some produce that is going to be coming out to a particular sell by time or use by time, if you can't convert it into something that you can sell on, even at a reduced rate, then, you know, you kind of reach out to everybody and say, please just don't end up putting in the dumpsters outside. Try and find a way of connecting with some local community or charity bases. I'm sure they are. I'm sure we're not saying anything that people aren't already considering. But I think it's just an opportunity to remind everybody that there are. We shouldn't be wasting anything at the moment. Everything has a value. Even if we're giving it away free, it will be of huge value to people in these difficult times.
That's true. And these food banks here in Germany, as far as I heard it, they even had difficulties getting all the supplies that they needed in the past weeks because people were buying
so much in the current
situation in the supermarkets that there were just less things left over. And even outside of these crises, status, we should still be as hoteliers or restaurateurs or supermarkets, not waste the food, but really try to make use of everything that we have produced within the value chain. But one thing I would like to add here is that even when we've been talking about doing delivery services or dark kitchens now, it's probably not going to yield the same amount of revenues that you would make in normal times.
No.
It is still kind of a bit like a mitigation strategy, I would call it, to at least bring in some revenues, because we all have a bit of a social thing also to do, not only in the crisis.
Yeah, social responsibility.
Social responsibility.
Yeah.
And that also means that at least bring in some cash flow to be capable of having your employees to be around. You have probably selected a super good team. Also now your responsibility is to care for them and not lay them off completely. And I don't think nobody wants to do it, but there might be a time where just if that now lingers on for a couple of months, half a year or even longer, that we all need to do decisions that we all don't want to make. And so it's at least maybe relieving a bit your balance sheet here. And there's a tremendous amount of creative ideas out there right now, especially from a restaurant scene. They now had so many creative ideas and sourcing food from wholesalers and just cooking them without even charging for it and delivering them to the hospital workers, for example, basically doing everything kind of for free, but keeping their people busy and giving a meaning to their everyday life. And I think that is very, very important.
Yeah.
There's one thing to deal with the crisis now is to stick your head in the ground and wait until it's over, or be really proactive, do something that helps the other people in your country or even in the world, and to work proactively on what's to come in the future after we successfully went through this time period now.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. Okay, so we've looked at areas where, and we use the term business is available, and maybe we could rephrase that, where there is opportunities to either engage, support, help. There may be some small revenue that might mitigate some of the challenging economical situations. But again, balancing what we are charging and who we are charging, I think, is a very important factor to state, that maybe put aside the economical drivers. And if we can afford to, let's at least try and help those people that are trying to help us or need our help in these difficult times, but at least keep our staff or keep our businesses there. Because, you know, if we can be supportive, people will be there to support us when we come out the other side. And I think that's important to remember as well.
Exactly.
However, having looked at those avenues, we still all have jobs to do. So let's kind of pivot a little bit into what are the things that we should still be doing now, and where could we be adding value and maybe preparing our hotels and properties for the future. So let's move on to that bit. What are some of the key things we should be starting with?
I think there's an element of looking into what you really have to do and what you have to react to in terms of situation changes now for the near future. So let's say the next 1 to 3 months in that sense. And then there's also an element what you want to be looking at that can be described as mid or long-term influence on the business.
Yeah, makes sense.
And obviously for now, what you're interested to look into is, you know, if there's any special event changes going on, right? You want to be reacting onto that. You want to adjust your pricing strategy. You want to be looking into your business mix in that sense. But you also want to make sure that once you're looking into the future periods, you're looking at seeing if those events are going to be happening at some later stage, maybe this year, and you want to get yourself prepared for having the right strategy in place for that. Looking at your and monitoring, obviously, your high demand and special event periods is certainly something that brings absolute value and is required by revenue management professionals. And not only by them, but also from other stakeholders that are still at work, right?
Yeah, I mean, that business will come back at some point in time.
Exactly, it will.
And here it's especially important to understand, and we as revenue managers are very much equipped for making this shift in gears in our head, because we are basically the ones sitting at the center of all the data coming in for future reservations, cancellations. You have all the data about your feeder markets, your pickup, because it's really important that everyone understands that the situation will get better in medium or long term. And when you are pricing future periods, especially for fares, but also normal periods, the common mistake is often made that you're underpricing or underestimating what you can squeeze out of certain high demand periods in the future, because the current situation is looking so bad. So you have lots of agency requests, just to give an example, for upcoming very important fare periods for the end of 2020 or for 2021, who now want to renegotiate cancellation policies or even want to pressure the price down. But
yeah, of course,
you really need to stand tall here and have maybe another look at your analysis that you've done, maybe factor in a couple of new thoughts and data streams from the current situation, but still you need to make an assumption on your data how the future will look like and distinguish between the situation now and then.
Yeah, and I guess that's quite challenging.
But there's
It's absolutely.
There's tons of data available in the past. Talking, for example, now specifically about fare periods, and you just need to trust in the data that is available to you. here it's then really important to be capable of making this decision, how much of the current situation to factor in into your future high demand periods.
Yeah.
And it also goes along with, for example, writing different scenarios in terms of forecasting on how you're predicting the future to go on. We all have come to the conclusion that the amount of data that we have so far is just totally not sufficient to build any scenarios so far. But that is, for example, something that we've been doing now a lot for our clients,
right?
To build up different scenarios to give them a bit of an outlook on what is to be expected by the end of the year in terms of revenue from your property if certain things happen along the way.
So do you kind of take it in a situation where the coronavirus will be influencing the data that you're looking at going forward naturally, but do you look at it and say, okay, let me try and look at my data and just make decisions around that as it stands currently, and then factor in the variable as to how long will this last? And so what variable to my future data do I need to build in as sort of a risk management profile, or is that overcomplicating it or oversimplifying it maybe?
I wouldn't say oversimplifying, but in a way, obviously, we cannot deny the kind of data that is presented to us now with that huge downturn, obviously, coming along, and with the uncertainty of not knowing how long this is going to be dragging on. But I think what Till validly said is you want to be looking into building like kind of different scenarios for yourself from a forecasting perspective to basically figure out the extent on, you know, when could business be picking up again? How strong could it be? Like which kind of market segments are going to be responding firsthand, right? Taking into consideration also lead time and other, let's say, measurements or other criteria that would affect basically travel to happen. And from that perspective, I think you want to be looking into, if, of course, make some sort of assumptions as well, right? You could, for example, be saying in a realistic scenario, which has a value for me because that's something that I can present to the banks, that's something that I can present to the government officials at the end of the day, if I'm asking for, you know, some kind of support that I'm getting from them financially. Yeah. Also, they want to have an outlook, right?
That's a good point.
But what you want to be doing there, like, is have a couple of assumptions also on the side where you say, okay, national travel is going to be starting as of this month. International travel, which is heavily impacted by travel restrictions that are put up from many different countries, right? Starting as of that point again. Special events are taking place as of a specific point in time again. With something like this, you're trying to build up, first of all, kind of a realistic scenario. And secondly, you can also work on those factors in order to reflect kind of the worst case scenario. So let's say special events, anything that, you know, has a tendency of more than 1,000 people is not going to be happening until end of 2020. Something like this, you could be factoring into, let's say, a worst case scenario. And with that, you have some tangible measurements basically in place where you can say, okay, I can be looking forward to that business to come and be prepared to an extent that I have my best knowledge at right now. And that's simply a mixture out of, you know, the data that you have at hand from current crisis times, plus whatever you have seen from the past. And obviously that will factor into some different weights.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. It's about having some plans, isn't it? No one can be absolutely, I mean, we're never 100% sure. With the current situation, that percentage of certainty is probably reduced, but at least you can start to put some strategies together and some best guesses that at least enables you to then adapt as circumstances change, but to be ready for that.
Exactly.
Important point here is as soon as you build up these, as you said, plans now to have a look or clearer view on the future, it is really not about being super specific so that you're talking about national travel will be available as the 5th of June, for example,
yeah.
and international travel by the 15th of August. But really having a bit of an overview of maybe in this month, it could be that we can travel within our own country again, and then a month later or 2 months later, international travel might be possible from a couple of countries. Also looking a bit into which countries went first into this pandemic and which ones came later. So that could indicate that these countries will maybe have to do with the pandemic a bit longer.
Yeah, so you may see more coming in from Asia or Europe than you will from the US because of that time delay. Yeah.
Probably.
Exactly.
Yeah. And as soon as you have these scenarios, it enables you very much to go into kind of an action mode, because as soon as you figure out that your national market, especially leisure market, will be the first one you're expecting to rebound, this is where you should start looking for business also the first. So what you need to do now, and especially when you have some spare time now to spend, make sure that your distribution is set up in a way and your contracting side that you can get a competitive edge over your competition in attracting this market that you're expecting to rebound first.
Yeah, it seems sensible. I mean, it's most likely your domestic market, people will be allowed to travel within the country probably before we see a huge degree of international travel or regional travel growing on. That seems natural.
Yeah.
But the cool thing about these scenarios is then that you have different ways of moving forward. Of course, you first of all need to agree on one scenario, which will probably be the realistic one. But then it's like a step-by-step effort now to set up all the different actions along the way. And then you need to adapt to what is going on in the reality. So as soon as you see that the case that you define to mark the next step in your scenario, for example, they will lift the travel restriction within your own country, will then indicate that you now need to go on with your action plan that is aligned then with your scenario.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. I think in one of the previous podcasts, I've quoted probably inaccurately Sun Tzu and his Art of War before, but in broad terms, he talks about when in peace, prepare for war, and when in war, prepare for peace. And in a sense, we feel like we're in a war status at the moment. And so now is the time for you to prepare for when the situation changes. How can I be ready to adapt to that changing circumstance? And that's a challenge because we're still trying to cope with these unusual circumstances. But we will come out the other end, and the better prepared we are, and the more that we have identified that strategy that we've developed can start to be put into play, we can then press that button and start to move into action mode and hopefully be slightly ahead of the curve and get ourselves onto a stronger footing a little quicker.
Yep. Yeah. I think all of us know that in the past years, I mean, we all had so much on our tables that some of us were still proactive in their work, but also you're reacting towards all the stuff that was thrown at you. But now less things been thrown at us, especially as revenue managers. So we need to just now make sure that we use our time wisely and have a look at all the things that we might have only covered with a minor detail to attention. Like, for example, reviewing a long-term pricing and yielding strategy, double-checking it maybe with historical data from a couple of years back, maybe even digging out data if you have it from the end of the financial crisis.
Yeah, it's a good way, again, at least a benchmark of some challenge that you faced at that time, yeah.
Yeah, try and get yourself some sort of reference, right, that can be used in order to judge that situation that we're in now a little bit better. And I think looking back at different crisis dates is certainly something to do. Even though obviously it won't reflect, let's say it won't reflect the same rebound rates most probably as previous events have done, but it gives you some sort of idea.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And if we're taking those kind of that evaluation piece, is there anything else? I mean, I guess things like the way that you're working with OTAs, even simple things like what is your What is your content? What is your look on the OTAs? I mean, we've got some podcasts to release around that at a more appropriate time. But you know, that now is a time to look at how you are set up for your distribution channels.
Absolutely.
Yeah, now is really the time, as we said, if you now need to figure out where your business is coming from in the future after this crisis is ending, you need to be prepared to be bookable online and showcase your property in the best possible way. Now it's the time to invest time into double checking if you're well prepared in terms of online distribution.
And most specifically, looking at how well you are prepared from a direct booking standpoint. And this is where we've done the other podcast around, right? So,
yeah. Well, thanks for teeing that up. So, we will have a couple of podcasts to release in the coming weeks when we start to shift from the how do we deal with now to how do we deal with the future. Forming a nice link there, right? You've obviously done this before. let's talk a little bit about future business and what are the things that we should be considering. What are the things we should be looking at and taking in mind going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. And for that, I think, as Till mentioned before, it's important to, you know, get a good view on which kind of your feeder markets are rebounding in the very first place. And then obviously trying to look into those kind of feeder markets and properly understand where they would be booking you, right? And if you get that understanding, also maybe outlined with your different scenarios that you've done on the forecasting part and with the assumptions you've made on that end, but you will very quickly find distribution possibilities and opportunities that are maybe different from what you have been doing before, right? And this is what it's all about, right? Going into different ways and be kind of prepared for that. So any ideas on new distribution channels that you think can be relevant in order to cater your, let's say, assumed feeder markets that are rebounding in the very first place, this is what you want to be looking into. So you can use the current downtime to select the best partners and maybe get new partnerships built up.
Well, that's what I was thinking, you know, looking at different partnerships as well. And I mean, again, I don't want to keep referring back to the next podcast that'll be coming in. But, you know, there are elements in there where we also had where we did a podcast before about looking at distribution and how sometimes we're working within such tight windows of immediacy that, you know, we're often not looking a little further out. And so maybe we're not necessarily exploring other distribution partners where they may not bring us the volume. Volume will be important, but we've got a bit of time where, you know, we could be finding some different partnership relationships where maybe the contractual constraints and the cost that we're paying about that may be slightly more advantageous for us. And I think, as you mentioned before, Till, we get so much thrown at us generally day to day. We don't always have the time to explore these. We kind of do it in a somewhat superficial, not consciously, but just time pressure means that it's superficial. Whereas actually we could start to look in a lot more depth around what partnerships might be out there and how they line in with our feeder markets. There may be other avenues out there that we haven't explored fully at this point.
That's true. And also talking about different distribution channels that we might have neglected in the past, as business was there and running and demand was high, where you now really need to rethink twice if you shouldn't reconsider maybe contracting one or two partners that you've thrown out in the past 2 or 3 years where demand was high, because now you have empty beds to fill and it's not going to bump back to the same level in your KPIs that you've seen maybe last year or the year before. So it's still a long way up to the top again. So you might need additional partners to fill your beds, to have more visibility across different channels. And also now you really have the time to research special partners that might cater to specific niche markets. I know we've talked about some of them also in some other podcast, and it's also something that's going to be released in the future. As you said, for example, you expect Nordic countries to come back in the future as one of the first countries in terms of international travel, spend a couple of hours in researching which big distribution channels are there catering to travelers from the Nordics that are outside the big three or four OTAs that you're anyways connected to source some revenues from them as well and to be present as soon as they lift the travel restrictions.
Yeah, good point.
That's also a step-by-step approach. Then you can, as soon as you've done your homework there and contracted the partners or the one partner that you feel is the best one to cater that feeder market, you can then go on in your action plan and search for the next markets that you want to tap into. Yeah. That's the way how you gradually get out of this.
That makes sense. And what about in terms of, I mean, one of the issues, I guess, that I would be considering as a leisure traveler is, you know, the situation I've been in before. If I'm booking, but what if something changes? What if I book for the future, but the restrictions don't lift in time? You know, how can I create ways that, as a hotelier, I could be seen to be a bit more flexible to try and encourage somebody that if they are looking to book in the future, they can feel confident around whether it's, you know, deposits, whether it's cancellations, whatever. I mean, there's a number of factors in there. What are your kind of thoughts and recommendations around that?
I think when it comes to offering flexibility for guests to book with us in the future, it's really important, actually, you know, addressing that sense of uncertainty at the moment, which also obviously our guests feel, right? So they don't know if they are going to be allowed traveling in July time. They don't know if you know, they are recommended to stay at home still in November time, whatever. But when it comes to that part, obviously you want to be trying to, you know, at least get that business that you actually deserve and where you make guests feel comfortable booking with you and they still have the flexibility to change their plans, basically. So that would basically go into that direction of promoting flexible cancellation policies. Whereas that stands a little bit in conflict with trying to generate cash flow right now for the hotels via non-refundable rates. And I think there's no blanket approach that can be taken here. So it has to be kind of a mixture and it has to make sense for the specific property in a specific market with a specific guest mix at the end of the day. Also filtering out what the actual purpose of the guests are to come and visit you or come and visit your destination, basically. In that sense, I think when we're looking at leisure business to come back, you still want to be giving them the flexibility to change their plans. And at the end of the day, you also want to be addressing the fact that even if they would have to cancel their stay again, or if their plans would change, they still have the option to basically rebook with us for even another date. Right. So try and keep it as flexible as possible. That's what I would be recommending. And then obviously, once you're looking into any special events periods that are coming along, let's say in 2021, you want to be trying to generate cash flow right now in terms of getting non-refundable business.
If you're sitting there now working with your hotels, how far out are you looking?
We're looking basically up until, it's also very different with hotels, but like generally,
sure.
If I'm looking at a hotel that I'm handling myself, then I'm at least looking for the next 2.5 years in terms of, you know, seeing what's happening.
Yeah.
I think that's also something that is certainly required, even though obviously bookability might not necessarily be given for 2.5 years out, but you want to be monitoring on special event periods, high demand periods that are coming along there, and just get yourself as prepared as possible. And with that said, that doesn't necessarily mean that you have to promote your flexible cancellation policies for that same period, but just do it in a sensible way where you feel, okay, this would make people then feel comfortable to book with you.
Yeah, I guess if you're looking at something that's 18 months out, you're going to be less flexible than if you're looking for something that's maybe 6 months out for obvious reasons. Yeah.
Yes, indeed. So what you could still do in terms of securing cash flow here is you could still offer non-refundable rates for summer travel. So in case we're all hoping that for those people who want to go on summer holidays, at least they can do it. But we still see in terms of pickup patterns now that people are really hesitant in committing to these travels, you can still offer a discount and fence it in terms of making it non-refundable, but the refund could still be given in terms of a voucher that the guest will receive to rebook at a later stage for the same amount.
Yeah, it's interesting you mentioned that. We did a podcast at the end of last week that we're going to be releasing in the next day or two with Apaleo and GiftUp around gift vouchers. I mean, GiftUp are just doing a promotion at the moment, and that's part of this was in terms of a social responsibility thing. What can they be doing to kind of help hotels to try and, you know, retain business if people are cancelling, being able to offer them a voucher instead of cancelling for later on. But, you know, this gift voucher piece fits into either offering it to them if they're not able to fulfill the future booking, or rather than even having to have that cancellation, non-cancellation thought process, you can take bookings via a gift voucher, secure the that piece of revenue and secure a future booking, and then just be able to adjust the time in which that individual can actually then cash in that voucher and use it.
Yeah, indeed. That's also another opportunity to sell gift vouchers now. And I've seen that a lot now on some of the online flash sale portals that hotel chains or individual hotels are now selling vouchers that are valid for 3 years. So you will hopefully be capable of redeeming it then maybe next summer or the summer after, if not this year. But still, you get some cash flow to keep your organization alive.
Yeah, and again, it's not going to be the same as it would have been before if this hadn't happened.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to be able to sell in the same way that you did. We're in a different world, but just a chance to be out there and offering an opportunity and saying the hotel is still open and we will be open in the future is an important message to get out there anyway.
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, that's true. And another lever that you can basically pull in terms of securing cash flow now for future periods would also be review your deposit policies for future, for example, fare periods closely. If you need the cash now, you could give a discount to a future group that's traveling to your property for a fare period, for example. You could give them a bit of a higher discount, but they need to pay you earlier than they would normally do. So you could secure the cash a bit earlier while they get an advantage in terms of overall price. Yeah.
That's a little bit of a give and take approach also in that sense, right? You're offering them a higher discount and they are looking into paying you much further in advance.
Yeah, very much so. And it's back to this, you know, we're all in this together scenario, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you want us there in the future, then, you know, we'll help you, but you help us scenario. And I think that, and again, you know, on the gift voucher piece, I've seen some examples where hotels have actually been offering, you know, 1.5 times the value or 2 times the value. Mm. So, you know, if you buy a gift voucher of €200 now, when you actually come to use it will be worth €300 or €400 in terms of the value that you gain when you come to use that gift voucher. So
yeah, that's for sure. Very good.
Very good. Well, I think we've covered a lot of the core main points.
Like I think just as a final note, maybe from my side, try and keep the communication with different stakeholders as high as possible, right? So you want to be ultimately maintaining the interest in your product, and that applies to, you know, how you're communicating with your guests, how you're communicating with your partners, basically, how you're communicating with some sort of group agents. Just broadly show how you're coping with the situation. After the fact, do good things and talk about it, right? And maybe also share what you as a hotelier are looking forward to when this whole situation or crisis is kind of over. I think there's different ways, and obviously we're not experts on communication, but keeping this storytelling part alive, this is very important in order to stay in the guest's mind and consider you as a trustworthy partner as well out there.
But yeah, I like this the storytelling part a lot. I mean, now everybody seems to be sitting at home and browsing around trying to find the next getaway after they allow to travel again. And I think the storytelling approach and keeping the interest in the product and the destination alive is a very, very powerful powerful tool, while at the same page showcasing what you've done maybe in the past or how you're thinking about securing the your guest health also in the future. And there were some really nice examples in the past as well, where hotels were guaranteeing that the room was deep cleaned and not used for, I guess, 24 hours it was before you're checking in, so that you can absolutely be sure that you get a virus-free room in that sense. And that can, I think, really, really help in encouraging the guests to select your property as the preferred one.
Cleanliness is going to be a massive factor when people are starting to come through. Understanding how a hotel has cleaned itself to be ready to take guests on and make sure that there isn't any latency hanging around is going to be a key message that needs to get out there. There will be a pent-up demand after people have been cooped up, particularly during this time of year. You know, if it had been in the winter and everyone is normally used to spending time inside anyhow, I think psychologically that's very different. The desire to want to get out will be huge when this does start to clear. So there will be travel again. People will want to come and stay and to let people know that you're there and open for business.
Well said.
Yep, couldn't agree more.
Perfect. Well, thanks again, guys. Always a pleasure. Let's all stay healthy and stay safe. Thanks, guys.
Thanks very much.
Stay healthy.
Stay safe. Stay healthy.
So that's the end of today's podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. If you had any questions or future topic suggestions, please feel free to reach out via content@revenue-hub.com. Thank you all for listening. If you like what you heard, please subscribe, like, and tell your colleagues and friends. Catch you next time.